Liberals at Yale hold a hunger strike, so the young Republicans hold a barbecue right next to them. Catering hunger strikes for more than 40 years, this is the Daniel Natale Show. One of the great innovations of the modern era was, according to economist Adam Smith, the division of labor. In The Wealth of Nations, he talks about how originally artisans made an entire product, but with the advent of factory production, the work was divided between specialists on an assembly line. See here.
And he suggests that men can be much, much more efficient in the manufacturing of pens if they divide the process up into multiple different steps, each of them becoming specialized and educated into their particular individual step, that together by doing that, they will be much more efficient and much more productive through the specialization, which he calls division of labor. So this is a quote from this section. He says, speaking of a pen factory where he has seen division of labor, quote, "I have seen a small manufactory of this kind where 10 men only were employed, and where some of them consequently performed two or three distinct operations. But though they were very poor, and therefore but indifferently accommodated with the necessary machinery, they could, when they exerted themselves, make among them about 12 pounds of pins in a day. There are in a pound upwards of 4,000 pins of a middling size. Those 10 persons, therefore, could make among them upwards of 48,000 pins in a day. Each person, therefore, making a tenth part of 48,000 pins, might be considered as making 4,800 pins in a day. But if they had all wrought separately and independently, and without any of them having been educated to his particular business, they certainly could not each of them have made 20, perhaps not one pin in a day. That is certainly not the 240th, perhaps not the 4,800th part of what they are at present capable of performing, in consequence of a proper division and combination of their different operations." End quote.
Because of this paradigm shift in manufacturing, society became much more productive. Products came out of the factory faster and more abundance, hence cheaper. Items that would have been out of reach for the average person in the age of the artisan suddenly became affordable enough when they were created in this division of labor fashion. But let's stop there. Consider how, as a system gets more complex, you get a division of labor. This isn't just true in economics. It's also true in political systems. Herbert Spencer talked about it in 1873, how in primitive societies there's no division of labor. That comes as civilization becomes more complex. See here. Take first the general fact that along with social aggregation, there always goes some kind of organization. In the very lowest stages, where the assemblages are very small and very incoherent, there is no established subordination, no center of control. Chieftainships of several kinds come only along with larger and more coherent aggregates. The evolution of a governmental structure having some strength and permanence is the condition under which alone any considerable growth of a society can take place. A differentiation of the originally homogeneous mass of units into a coordinated part and a coordinated part is the indispensable initial step. The differentiation of the regulating part and the regulated part is in small primitive societies not only imperfectly established, but vague. The chief does not at first become unlike his fellow savages in his functions, otherwise than by exercising greater sway. He hunts, makes his weapons, works, and manages his private affairs in just the same ways as the rest, while in war he differs from other warriors only by his predominant influence, not by ceasing to be a private soldier. And along with this slight separation from the rest of the tribe in military functions and industrial functions, there is only a slight separation politically. Judicial action is but very feebly represented by exercise of his personal authority in keeping order. At a higher stage, the power of the chief being well established, he no longer supports himself. Still, he remains undistinguished industrially from other members of the dominant class, which has grown up while chieftainship has been getting settled, for he simply gets productive work done by deputy, as they do. Nor is a further extension of his power accompanied by complete separation of the political from the industrial functions, for he habitually remains a regulator of production, and in many cases a regulator of trade, presiding over acts of exchange. Of his several controlling activities, this last is, however, the one which he first ceases personally to carry on. Industry early shows a tendency toward self-control, apart from the control which the chief exercises more and more as political and military head. The primary social differentiation which we have noted between the regulative part and the operative part is presently followed by a distinction, which eventually becomes very marked, between the internal arrangements of the two parts.
the operative part, slowly developing within itself agencies by which processes of production, distribution, and exchange are coordinated, while coordination of the non-operative part continues on its original footing. Along with the development which renders conspicuous the separation of the operative and regulative structures, there goes a development within the regulative structures themselves. The chief, at first uniting the characters of king, judge, captain, and often priest, has his functions more and more specialized as the evolution of the society in size and complexity advances.
Aristotle says that different forms of government have different end goals. The end goal of an oligarchy is the transfer of wealth from the many to the few. The end goal of a republic is the promotion of virtue among the people. The end goal of a democracy, says Aristotle, is equality. Plato talks about this fetish for equality in a democracy and the republic. In it, he describes how, as a democracy swings out of control, the thirst for equality sees them equalize virtue with vice, the citizen with the foreigner, human beings with animals. What the proponent of democracy doesn't seem to understand is that the equality that democracy holds up as its ideal is actually a characteristic of a primitive society, as G.K. Chesterton affirms.
It is far more probable that a primitive society was something like a pure democracy. To this day, the comparatively simple agricultural communities are by far the purest democracies. Democracy is a thing which is always breaking down through the complexity of civilization. Anyone who likes may state it by saying that democracy is the foe of civilization.
My point in all this is that young people, like the Yale students who are throwing a hunger strike for democracy, don't seem to understand that with civilization, segregation of duties emerge, divisions of labor, and yes, hierarchies. Hierarchies are emblematic of the kind of complex societies that are capable of bringing them their iPhones and lattes. They think that they can have the goodies of civilization with none of its underlying structures. They couldn't be more wrong. Without hierarchies, you can't have civilization. The best illustration of their political model is a primitive tribe which lives in huts. Everyone is equal in poverty, drudgery, and backwardness. But then, living in primitive huts is the logical result of their war against carbon and their hatred of free market economics. And this is why it's appropriate that we circled back around to the Yale students' hunger strike. These pampered, entitled scions of wealth and power better get used to the privation, hardship, and poverty that their policies naturally result in. Hunger won't be a fashion statement. If they get all their policies through, it will be a way of life. Bravo, equality. Another win for democracy. I just finished a new podcast on the connection between CERN and the destruction of the Georgia Guidestones. It'll be uploaded on The New American soon, but you can catch it sooner on Locals. The address there is thenewamerican.locals.com. Hook up with us on that platform and get access to extra content.